I'm Hugh Bennett for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I will be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Our cover story this week is entitled Growth Juice: How Two Communities in North Carolina Came Together Over Water and Wastewater Flow to prepare for Commercial and Residential Growth. Two is better than one. How two Greater Triangle municipalities are merging utilities to increase growth capacity. The cover story is by Ben Tobin. The town of Pittsboro has been a target for development for decades. It has close proximity to Chapel Hill, Raleigh, and Durham, much cheaper housing than one can find in the heart of the Research Triangle, and thousands of acres to build massive mixed-use communities. But something has stymied the Chatham County town of roughly 5,000 people from reaching its full potential: a lack of water and wastewater capacity to support new developments. Pittsboro had 15 development moratoriums and extensions between 1999 and 2011, although there has not been an official moratorium since then. But while Pittsboro's population grew by roughly 1,000 people between 2010 and 2020, its wastewater and water capacity held stagnant at 750,000 gallons per day and 2 million gallons per day, respectively, leaving the town's Board of Commissioners reluctant to approve projects both big and small. Pittsboro Town Manager Jonathan Franklin says the capacity issues left the town in dire straits. "We were at the point where we didn't even have capacity to build bathrooms at our parks," he says. Building a new system to replace the 1977 wastewater plant proved to be too expensive, so the town called the city of Sanford in Lee County, which is using only a little more than half its water capacity, and sought to join forces. This past summer, the town signed an interlocal agreement for Sanford to become Pittsboro's utility provider. All of the town's assets will be transferred to Sanford by June 30 as the two municipalities work together on future capital improvement projects. Proponents of the plan call it a win-win. Pittsboro will add capacity while Sanford, with a population of more than 31,000 people, can keep costs down through economies of scale. Pittsboro and other smaller towns throughout the Greater Triangle are seeing unprecedented growth as more people flock to the Triangle and are looking for cheaper homes and investments. But sometimes, as in the case of Pittsboro, these small towns don't have the infrastructure, like water, to accommodate more people. And as construction costs and high interest rates make new projects untenable, smaller towns are increasingly becoming interdependent in order to keep up with rapid population growth. The impact of working with Sanford has almost been instantaneous for Pittsboro, according to Kyle Shipp, the town's mayor-elect. The Pittsboro Board of Commissioners is hearing several major mixed-use projects with more than 1,000 acres combined that would have no chance of passing if the town weren't on its way to increasing its capacity. Now that we do have a solid path to sewer capacity, we're seeing much, much more activity of people that want to come develop in Pittsboro, Shipp says. Green Hawk Development of Raleigh had high hopes when it submitted plans in March 2022 to the town of Pittsboro for Turkey Creek, a 140-acre mixed-use project that would include hundreds of homes, more than 4.5 acres of commercial use, and more than 225,000 square feet of light industrial and office space. Located at 569 Moncure Pittsboro Road on the southern edge of town, Turkey Creek was slated to be just minutes away from the site for VinFast's huge electric vehicle plant outside Moncure. With that plant expected to be operational in 2025, Turkey Creek seemed primed to be a community in which the thousands of workers VinFast promises to employ at the plant could reside. But the project was denied by the Pittsboro Board of Commissioners that summer, and both Jeremy Medlin, Executive Vice President of Real Estate for Green Hawk Development, and Shipp say a lack of sewage capacity kneecapped that development. Fast forward a year, and Medlin and crew pitched the same project again after Pittsboro and Sanford merged their utility systems. And unlike the prior attempt, Turkey Creek easily gained rezoning approval from the Pittsboro Planning Board and the Board of Commissioners. Medlin, fully knowing Pittsboro was on its way to increase sewer capacity, exuded confidence that his company would not run into the same obstacles it had in 2022. The year-over-year turnaround with the Turkey Creek project is exactly what proponents of the Pittsboro-Sanford utility merger hope to see. Abated fears of water and wastewater capacity, leading to more projects being pitched and approved. And developers love the new possibilities. Kirk Bradley, Chairman, President, and CEO at Lee Moore Capital Company, has spearheaded Mosaic, a 226-acre mixed-use development within the 7,100-acre Chatham Park, as well as Northwood Landing across the street, a 44-acre mixed-use project. Chatham Park has its own wastewater treatment plant that supplies Mosaic, and Northwood Landing is supplied by Pittsboro. Growing is better than not growing, as you can ask a lot of towns around the state, but it has its challenges and opportunities, Bradley says. Allowing the utility situation to be worked in tandem with a larger utility, which Pittsboro and Sanford are now doing, gives the administration and elected officials in Pittsboro the chance to focus on all the opportunities that come their way. Keeping costs down. The benefits of the merger for Pittsboro may be obvious, but what exactly is in it for Sanford? For one, the merger will help keep costs down for Sanford Utilities customers for years, according to Sanford Mayor Rebecca Wyhoff Salmon. Instead of the city having to work alone to upgrade its water treatment plant and expand its capacity from 12 million gallons per day to 30 million gallons per day, for example, it can now split those capital expenses with Pittsboro and two Wake County towns it helps supply water to, Fuquay Varina and Holly Springs. Each of those jurisdictions is paying for a proportional share of the expansion, Salmon says. Any upgrades are going to have a fixed infrastructure cost, so being able to share that amongst more parties spreads that out. It's a straight economies of scale, and we will have greater revenue diversification with more paying Sanford Utilities customers. Total capital costs for the utilities project between Sanford and Pittsboro, including the completion of a wastewater force main and water transmission line between the two, as well as upgrades to Sanford's plants, are estimated to cost a little more than $230 million, according to a Pittsboro-run website on the merger. But in working together, the two municipalities will be eligible for more than $110 million in grants to help subsidize these projects, rather than roughly half that if they were to work alone, according to the website. And the merger is already helping to land those grants. According to a Sanford City Council agenda from last month, the Rocky Mount nonprofit Golden Leaf Foundation awarded Sanford a $55 million grant on October 26th for work on the Force Main sewer line between it and Pittsboro. Additionally, Sanford customers will not pay any more in their rates due to the merger, Salmon says. And though higher right now, pre-merger, a residential customer who uses 3,500 gallons per month in Pittsboro is paying combined $115.59 for water and wastewater, compared to $58.97 by the Sanford customer. Pittsboro customers will eventually be paying less, so that every customer in Pittsboro and Sanford is paying the same rate, says Pittsboro's Franklin. Right before the merger, Pittsboro lowered rates 5% for customers, according to Franklin. Pittsboro's rates are not the highest in the state, but they're certainly not the lowest, he says. In local government, we always want to provide the highest quality service at the best reasonable price. So this was kind of a no-brainer in terms of the rate parity, because any time that you can get your rate down that low just from cooperating with a neighboring municipality, it's really a win-win for everybody. But there is a small catch to the rates going down for customers that might make developers raise their eyes. Builders of new homes or businesses are going to have to pay higher one-time system development fees to be connected to the utility, according to SHIP. For example, if a developer were to build a subdivision in Pittsboro, it will now cost $15,100 per standard house, whereas it would previously cost $12,000 per house, according to SHIP. We don't think overall on development that this is going to have a big impact in Pittsboro because there's such a demand, SHIP says, but it does certainly impact things like creating more affordable housing because just like all costs are increasing, the system development fee is increasing. Regional approaches work. Pittsboro and Sanford are far from the first municipalities in the Greater Triangle in North Carolina to share utilities. The city of Raleigh, for example, is a water and wastewater powerhouse. The North Carolina Capitol provides the two utilities to six surrounding municipalities after merging with them in the early 2000s. Garner, Knightdale, Rollsville, Wake Forest, Wendell, and Zebulon. This approach of working with surrounding municipalities, which is called utility regionalization, is becoming increasingly commonplace throughout North Carolina, according to Shadi Eskaf, Director of the Division of Water Infrastructure for North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality. Eskaf says his department has seen an increase in applications in recent years from municipalities for utility merger feasibility studies. As water and sewer costs go up and it becomes more expensive to maintain infrastructure, smaller local governments in particular are looking for alternatives, Eskaf says. At some point, raising rates even further makes it unaffordable for their customer bases, so they're looking for different solutions, and regionalization could be a cost-saving measure for their customer base. Cost-saving for customers was exactly what the town of Bethel in Pitt County had in mind when it decided to merge with its utilities with the larger Greenville Utilities Commission in 2021. Utility customers in Bethel, a small town with a population of less than 1,400 people, told local news outlets in 2021 that they'd pay double for water and wastewater bills inside the town that they would immediately outside, and improvements to Bethel's aging infrastructure would jack up those costs even further. Unlike with Pittsburgh, capacity wasn't an issue for Bethel Systems, according to Josh Lewis, president and CEO of the Greenville Eastern North Carolina Alliance, a public-private partnership. But being able to pay for infrastructure improvements alone was untenable. For Bethel, in this instance, GUC stepped in and provided some stability and capital, Lewis says. It helped Bethel residents receive a cost-efficient services, which in turn allows more houses to be built in the town and spur organic growth. On top of Bethel, the GUC serves water and sewer customers to several subdivisions surrounding the city of Greenville and nearby municipalities. As for its electrical utility, GUC serves more than 75% of Pitt County. Lewis said having a strong utility that can provide services throughout the county has helped make Pitt County an attractive site for further future development. For attracting any kind of development, utilities and infrastructure are everything, Lewis says. You can have land, you can have a cheap real estate, and it can be flat as a pancake and not need a lot of engineering work. But if you can't get utilities to the site is worthless. An area on the rise. The Pittsburgh-Sanford area has been on a roll as of late with residential, commercial, and especially industrial developments, and the merger will only help, proponents say. The $4 billion VinFast plant could bring 7,500 jobs to the Triangle Innovation Point megasite, which will receive water and wastewater from Sanford. On the western side of Chatham County, at the Chatham-Siler City megasite, chipmaker Wolf Speed is planning for a $5 billion materials factory to start operations next year. Both those megasites have plenty of room to attract more sizable investments from major employers that could lead to thousands of more jobs in the area. One thing the area hasn't attracted, though, is a corporation looking to build an office campus in the region. Ship says that while the area is in really good shape for some bigger projects that aren't possible in other places because of the amount of land we still have available, it may be a while until they can mimic what Research Triangle Park did in attracting Apple, which is planning a campus with several office buildings. As much as we'd like to see that corporate headquarters type of deal or some other large development, the reality is that one of the things we need to continue to be attractive for, that is residential development that has been stifled for a little bit, Ship says. Salmon, meanwhile, says that having a strong utility system has helped bolster Sanford's reputation as a place to do development, and the merger with Pittsburgh has caught the eye of other Chatham County municipalities. The town of Siler City said in September that it is exploring a merger with Sanford, as the town needs more water and sewer capacity, but expanding capacity on our own would be a lengthy and expensive project, and other localities near us have already joined a regional utility system without issue. Our utility system is something that has set Sanford apart and makes us a regional leader, Mayor Salmon says. The biz section is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Here's the pitch. The small but effective nonprofit that envisioned the rise of the Blue Ridge Corridor is asking the city of Raleigh to create a new tax district that would further enhance the growth of that region. Dr. Stuart Levin, who jump-started the drive to upgrade the Blue Ridge Road area in 2008, and Jeff Murison, the CEO of the Hillsborough Street Community Service Corp, asked the City Council November 21st to create a municipal service district for that part of West Raleigh. Currently, the city has only two such districts for the Downtown Raleigh Alliance and the Hillsborough Street region. Creating one along Blue Ridge would be a major step. The Blue Ridge Corridor Alliance, with Levin as president, is a volunteer group that incorporated as a 501c3 in 2014, but still has limited resources. Also that year, it hired the Hillsborough Street Community Service Corp to help it promote that region. For years, the Blue Ridge Corridor saw little progress, but now the area is seeing major leaps. The Carolina Hurricanes have signed a long-term lease, and the PNC Arena will be expanded. Bandwidth has opened its new headquarters. The new home of the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services is rising, and major road improvements are underway. Creating an MSD would be a major step, allowing for a steady flow of funds to support programs, marketing, and more for the region as it continues to grow. If the city creates a district and applies an assessment level to it, then the properties in that boundary have that additional assessment, Morrison says. The revenue is collected and has to be spent on services as defined by the city contract that outlines the mission, the purpose of those funds. Wake County sees tourism on the rise. After the stifling days of the pandemic, Wake County is seeing its tourism-related metrics grow. The county's third quarter report, released by the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau, shows that as of September 30th, Wake's hotel occupancy rate was 68.9%. That's up 4.3% year-to-date and higher than the state's average 63.2% and the national average 64.3%. Revenue per available room, $88.54, is up 14% year-to-date, and the average daily rate, $128.49, is up 9.4%. Both metrics are higher than the state averages, but lower than national averages. Hospitality tax collections were also up, with prepared food and beverage tax collections totaling $33.3 million, which is up 18% year-to-date, and hotel occupancy tax collections totaling $28.5 million, up 11% year-to-date. This comes as major plans are in the works to expand the Raleigh Convention Center. Developer gets key financing. Grubb Properties acquired a $25 million loan for financing and lease-up of a two-building, 121,000-square-foot mixed-use project with parking deck in downtown Chapel Hill. Thoroughfare Capital, an affiliate of asset management platform Caladyne Group, LLC, and a commercial real estate debt manager, provided the financing. The company is renovating the property at 136 East Rosemary Street that will include Innovate Carolina, an innovation hub housing UNC Chapel Hill services for startups and entrepreneurs. Renovations include a complete overhaul of the facade, with floor-to-ceiling windows, improving the lobby and interior corridors, replacing infrastructure with new equipment, and constructing a sky bridge that will connect 137 East Franklin to 136 East Rosemary. Bigger jets may boost Nashville. In an interesting move, British Airways may pivot to a bigger plane for its direct flight to London from Nashville, Tennessee. British Airways now flies a Boeing 787-900 plane, which seats 216, but the flights are generally sold out, and British Airways may move to a plane with around 300 seats. American Airlines has the direct flight from Raleigh-Durham International Airport and flies a Boeing 767, which has roughly the same capacity as the 787 version. Huge price for Quail Hollow Suites. If you want to entertain corporate clients when the PGA Championship is held in Charlotte in 2025, it will cost you. Corporate entertainment options will start at $55,000 and top out at $475,000, organizers told the Charlotte Business Journal. An initial quiet period of sales targeting buyers from the 2017 PGA Championships at Quail Hollow resulting in commitments from various companies for 70% of the largest, most expensive suites surrounding the greens at the number 17 and number 18 holes, the newspaper reported. The tournament will be held May 15th through the 18th in 2025. Firm recalls surgical systems. Ascensus Surgical in Durham was forced to recall its robotic surgical systems due to a malfunction that could cause the systems to move unexpectedly. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration identifies the recall as a Class 1, representing the agency's most serious type of recall. The FDA says that no patient has been harmed due to this issue, but says the potential for critical issue trauma is possible. Ascensus sent letters September 15th to all affected customers informing them of the recall and requesting that they stop using the surgical system until Ascensus has updated the device's software. The recall affected five devices that were distributed between April 13th and September 7th, according to the FDA. The company's Senhance surgical system is intended for use in general laparoscopic surgical procedures and laparoscopic gynecological surgery. Through the first three quarters of the year, Ascensus generated about $3.1 million in revenue through the sale, lease, and service of its surgical systems. The On Finance and Travel section is provided by Lauren Onasorge. The top story in that section, investors say NC startups face hurdles. What does the Triangle startup ecosystem need? More startups and more investors, says a panel of investors speaking on the final day of NC Ideas annual ecosystem summit in Raleigh, November 15th. The four panelists all invest in early stage innovation in the Triangle. They included Tim McLaughlin, managing partner of Co-Founders Capital, which is currently investing out of its $50 million third fund. Zakiya Lee of Idea Fund Partners in its fourth fund. Robbie Allen of Early Stage Focus Triangle Tweener Fund. And Jen Summy of Newcomer Primordial, which targets pre-seed startups in the region and is planning to start a rolling fund in January. Allen, a serial entrepreneur with exits such as Automated Insights under his belt, said that while the region has made good strides since his own startup journey began, we also don't have the $500 million funds that write lots of big checks. Typically, an entrepreneur, you can't count on raising all your money from just North Carolina, Allen said. But that can be a challenge, McLaughlin said. He's heard out-of-state investors say there's just not enough unicorns, not enough big outcomes in the state of North Carolina to justify a $10 million commitment. Allen told the crowd, what the region really needs is more startups. The more startups you have, the better odds you have that you're going to have unicorns popping out of that, he said. Summy said the key is more investors, something that could be possible were the stringent rules governing accredited investors to be relaxed. Lee agreed, I really would love it if our investor base could be more diversified, she said. I need more women in my investor base. I need more people of color. Aeromexico drawn to Triangle by appealing demographics. A recently announced nonstop flight between Raleigh-Durham International Airport and Mexico City is the result of years of planning and great demographics, an airline executive says. Mexican airline Aeromexico will launch the flight to Mexico's capital city in July. It's a first for RDU. Jeff Morgan, Senior Vice President of Network Planning and Scheduling at Aeromexico, says the airline has had RDU on its shortlist for quite a while, and that the reason it didn't happen sooner was bureaucratic. For 2.5 years, Aeromexico had been stymied by a government freeze on new Mexican flights in the U.S., an issue that was resolved in September. Morgan says it was Raleigh's economics that clinched the decision. Everyone knows that among cities of Raleigh's size, Raleigh is one of the fastest growing, he said. That backdrop is very important. USCO closes Morgan Creek Digital Fund. A new fund out of Chapel Hill's Morgan Creek Capital targeting disruptive technologies has closed on more than $50 million. Morgan Creek Digital invests in so-called transformational technologies such as artificial intelligence and blockchain. Called Morgan Creek Digital Fund IVLP, the latest fund has closed on nearly $51.4 million, according to a securities filing. We're really, really lucky, Morgan Creek CEO Mark Yusko says. We have these amazing anchor investors who have been with us since we launched Morgan Creek Digital back in 2018. They're just really, really committed to the space. Yesco says the plan is to raise somewhere between $200 million and $300 million. Zach Ezone writes the On Healthcare and Higher Ed section. The top story there, UNC Health looks to expand in Chatham County. UNC Health is setting the stage for a big expansion in eastern Chatham County, where the population is set to explode in the coming years. The health system recently acquired 43 acres just east of Pittsboro in the huge Chatham Park development. UNC Health paid Preston Development Company $15.9 million for the land just south of US 64 bypass at Chatham Parkway, according to a deed filed November 16th. UNC Health says the land can accommodate up to 700,000 square feet of medical care facilities. The land sits within Chatham Park, an 8,500-acre master plan community led by Preston Development owners Bubba Rawl and Tim Smith. The deal provides UNC Health with ample space to expand in Chatham County, where new home construction is booming to support a growing population. The health system's existing operations in the county include Chatham Hospital in Siler City and UNC Chatham Park Medical Office in Pittsboro. UNC Health also has an urgent care at Mosaic, the commercial entrance to Chatham Park off Highway 501. This acquisition reaffirms our commitment to providing high-quality, accessible care to the residents of Chatham County and beyond, says Janet Hadar, president of UNC Hospitals. The site can be used for a range of services, such as patient care and ancillary services like pharmacies and laboratories, according to the property deed. The healthcare sector is ultra-competitive in the Triangle, with UNC, Duke Health, and Wake Med Health and Hospitals constantly battling for the rights to build new facilities and expand current operations through the state's Certificate of Need rules that regulate health systems. Chatham Park has about 1,000 residents and is slated for 22,000 homes at full build-out, according to Preston Development. An age-targeted neighborhood, Encore by David Weekly Homes, began selling in August. Del Webb at Chatham Park is expected to begin selling in 2025, and plans are being finalized to start delivery of an additional 4,500 lots in Chatham Park's North Village in 2024. Grifols gets FDA approval for new facility. Grifols has received approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for its new purification and filling facility at its massive manufacturing campus in Clayton. The FDA approval allows the company to produce its product Gamunex C. The facility enables Grifols to manufacture an additional 16 million grams of the therapy annually. This brings its total global capacity for the therapy to 60 million grams. Grifols, headquartered in Spain, plans to seek FDA authorization for the facility to produce another product, Xembify. Both drugs are approved to treat primary humoral immunodeficiency disease. The 150,000-square-foot facility is the company's most recent expansion at its Clayton manufacturing facility. Grifols says it has invested about $1 billion in the site over the past decade. The company in 2018 broke ground on the purification and filling facility. Avior Bio strikes deal with New Jersey firm. A public drug developer based in New Jersey is licensing the assets of a small pharmaceutical company in Cary. Theramune and local firm Avior Bio entered a patent license agreement on November 3rd that allows the public company to develop and commercialize a clinical stage asset focused on liver disease. Avior, in return, will receive a mid-six-digit license fee up front, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Avior will also receive a mid-six-digit fee that will be paid out in equal installments after the end of the upcoming four fiscal quarters. Laura Brummett writes the On Retail and Restaurant section. Advance Auto is cutting jobs as earnings miss. Alongside its third-quarter earnings released November 15th, Advance Auto Parts revealed multiple changes following a year of struggle for the company, including the departure of its CEO and chief financial officer, a slumping stock price, poor financial results, and being delisted from the S&P 500. As part of its cost-cutting strategy, Advance Auto will eliminate 400 positions. That includes positions at its Raleigh headquarters, the company says. Advance Auto also revealed plans to divest two of its businesses, Worldpac and its Canadian business operating as CarQuest, the retailer has initiated separate sale processes for the two companies. Worldpac is an automotive wholesale distributor of original equipment and aftermarket parts. The Canadian CarQuest business serves primarily commercial customers. Advance Auto acquired both brands under the acquisition of General Parts International in 2014. General Parts was a Raleigh company founded by O. Temple Sloan Jr. in 1961. The 2014 sale totaled $2 billion. On an earnings call, new CEO Shane O'Kelly said, "During my review of Advance, we identified the need to simplify our overall strategy while also improving execution, both of which will create value. Consistent with that, we are moving forward with a sense of urgency to help stabilize the company and return to profitable growth." O'Kelly began his role as CEO and president in September. Advance Auto is bringing on new leadership elsewhere. Ryan Grimsland will serve as executive vice president and CFO beginning November 27th. Former CFO Jeff Shepard left in August. Grimsland is leaving his position as senior vice president of strategy and transformation at home improvement retailer Lowe's to join Advance. Advance Auto also announced the departure of Jason McDonald, who served as executive vice president of merchandising, marketing, and e-commerce, a position that is now eliminated. McDonald joined Advance Auto in 2019 and came from PepsiCo, the same company former CEO Tom Greco left to join Advance Auto. Popular Cafe lands spot in Exchange. The Exchange Raleigh, a $1 billion development near North Hills, will now include a location of The Optimist, a full-service coffee shop and cafe. The Optimist will be located on the ground floor of the 1000 Social building, a 12-story office tower scheduled to open next year. The Optimist is a popular coffee shop in Raleigh at 1000 Brookside Drive. The shop is known for its unique decor, including several full-size skeletons that are permanent fixtures in the space. The Exchange Raleigh shop will be the second location for the Optimist and be called WRK by the Optimist. It will serve the same beverage offerings as the original location, including coffee, espresso, and tea. Holiday parties are back in 23. Bookings at Raleigh Country Club have surpassed pre-pandemic levels, says Christian Anastasiadis, chief operating officer of McConnell Golf, as event venues expect a robust holiday season. The events are both bigger in size than previous years and have higher budgets, he says. And finally, Raleigh restaurant fills Carrboro space. The Carrboro location of sports bar Hickory Tavern has closed, and Brews Public House has purchased the business with plans to open in the space. The new restaurant will be the second location for Brews Public House and will be served the same menu as its Raleigh location. The new Brews Public House is located at 370 East Main Street on the ground floor of the Hampton Inn and Suites. The Carrboro space is currently being renovated with an opening expected in February. The Raleigh location opened in Wade Park in the fall of 2021. Brews Public House serves appetizers, sandwiches, pizza, salads, and wings. Hickory Tavern has 20 restaurants around the Carolinas. Its Morrisville location closed last fall. Hickory Tavern's remaining restaurants include a location in Northwest Cary, Holly Springs, and Pinehurst. The On Greater Triangle Growth section is written by Ben Tobin. In Lee County, new library plan for growing Sanford. Lee County is gearing up to pour tens of millions of dollars into building a new library. The county is planning to build a $24 million library at 1418 Bragg Street in the O.T. Sloan Park in Sanford, and has submitted initial renderings to the Sanford-Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee. Beth List, Director of Library Services for Lee County Libraries, says the county's current main library, located at 107 Hawkins Avenue, is inadequately sized for the service and programs that we provide. By growing the library, we're keeping up with the growth that Sanford is seeing, List says. There's a lot coming in this new building that is really exciting and is really embracing all the things that we're doing for the community and all the programming that we're offering. Libraries aren't just books anymore. The county is paying for the library, according to List, and the plan is to break ground in May and open by October 2025. It will be around 34,000 square feet, which is a little less than double the size of the current library. List expects the expanded space will lead to hiring more employees. Amenities in the building will include a dedicated teen section with gaming areas, reading areas, and meeting spaces, a children's program room, outdoor space, and a maker space, among other things. This is just the latest in a stream of developments coming to Sanford. The city has grown from 28,094 people in 2010 to more than 31,000 in 2022. With that growth has come demand for new housing, services, and amenities. Business investments are also pouring in. Caterpillar, one of the county's largest employers, is planning a significant expansion of its local operations. The address of the new library will be 107 Hawkins Avenue. Holly Springs investor grabs property. Land in the middle of Chatham County has sold for more than $1 million as the county continues to attract large investments. AcreWise NC Pitts 34-001, an LLC tied to Holly Springs resident Pradeep Adibathula, purchased four tracts of land off U.S. 64 between Siler City and Pittsburgh for more than $1.25 million last month, according to Chatham County deed records. The address for the purchase is 7649 U.S. 64 West, and the land adds up to around 34 acres. The property appears mostly vacant, and Abathula did not respond to requests seeking comment. Cary Burger Shop expands to Lee County. A popular burger shop in Cary is open in a red-hot city far away from the Triangle's core. Corbett's Burgers and Soda Bar opened this month in Sanford at the shops at Sanford Retail Center along Highway 87. Owner Corbett Shope says he grew up in Harnett County near the Sanford area and has been looking to place a store in the buzzing city. It's a growing area, Shope says. A good space became available and we jumped on it. The new restaurant is 2,400 square feet and will employ 25 to 35 workers, Shope says. Its seating capacity is about 54 people. Shope says he's invested roughly $400,000 to upfit the space for the restaurant. Founded in Cary in 2013, Corbett's Burgers and Soda Bar serves burgers as well as hot dog sandwiches, french fries, milkshakes, and more. A Raleigh location is planned to open in 2024. Kaylee Thompson writes the On Real Estate section. Wake Forest project includes retail and office. A construction company in Wake Forest is planning an office and retail project for the fast-growing town. Focus Design Builders, a full-service design-build company, has applied for a rezoning to construct a two-building project for a specific client with retail and medical office space. The project is located at 418 Jones Dairy Road, south of Highway 98. Focus Design Builders is applying for the property to be zoned neighborhood business with conditions. The current zoning is rural holding district and light industrial. The conditions offered so far are to construct turn lanes and provide a public art installation. Site plans show there will be two buildings, each 25,200 square feet, with a courtyard patio between them. Retail will be on the ground floor with medical offices above. The traffic impact analysis study assumes a build-out of 2025 and said the offices will be medical and dental while the retail will have a sit-down restaurant. Parking will be surface lots with 212 spaces planned. There will also be a 10-foot-wide multi-use path fronting Jones Dairy Road. Jonathan Williams, Focus Design Vice President of Pre-Construction Services and Business Development, says the company is working on behalf of a client as it works through the rezoning process. He declines to provide further information. According to its website, Focus Design Builders has done projects that feature local and regional retailers, as well as specifically food and beverage operators and other services. The project sits on 5.61 acres and has two homes on site built in the 1950s and 60s. Focus Design Builders owns the property. The total assessed value is $374,375. Wake Forest has been growing fast as the community rides tailwinds from Raleigh's economic boom. The town's population has climbed above 50,000 after sitting at around 30,000 in 2010. Also south of Highway 98 is where Torchy's Tacos is opening its second location in North Carolina. Wheatfield Shopping Center in Wake Forest is adding several new retailers, including Summer Moon Coffee and Cape Fear Seafood Company. Further south on Jones Dairy Road in Rollsville is a rezoning to allow for a mixed-use project with homes and commercial offerings. Chapel Hill to get hundreds of new homes. A North Carolina developer is aiming to provide a variety of rental housing types in a popular area of Chapel Hill. Northwood Raven, with offices in Charlotte and Morrisville, has filed a rezoning and concept plan for Hillmont, a residential development off Highway 54 east of Finley Golf Club. Hillmont will have up to 500 rental units, including apartments, townhomes, and single-family homes in a multi-phase project. The company is seeking to change the zoning from mixed-use village to residential 6 with conditions. Other details like timeline and rental rates are unknown, as Northwood Raven was unavailable for comment. In the Harris Lake area, Holly Springs eyed for new homes and retail. More growth is coming to southern Wake County in the form of a mixed-use neighborhood. Green Hawk Development of Raleigh is seeking a rezoning for about 56 acres along Avent Ferry Road near Harris Lake, west of Holly Springs. The developer wants to rezone it from rural residential to neighborhood mixed use, with conditions to build multifamily units, townhomes, and commercial space. The rezoning would allow a maximum of 853 units, but the developer is only proposing between 250 to 300 units. Site plans show there will be cottage dwellings or quadruplexes and townhomes with a three-story maximum. The western corner of the site, where Avent Ferry Road meets Rex Road, will have the neighborhood commercial portion. A 10-foot-wide path will be installed on frontage along Avent Ferry and Rex Roads. 52 Shades of Success, the Latino Influence, explores the challenges and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by those in the Latin American community from all across the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. This 52-week project will also dive into important trends and issues relating to the DEI sector. Is the wealth gap widening? Latino households in North Carolina still face headwinds on the path to economic stability and ultimately economic mobility. The story is by Connie Gentry. A report released last month from the Brookings Institution, Closing the Latino Wealth Gap, explored regional differences in assets and debt held by the Latino community across 6 key states, one being North Carolina. The other 5 states, California, Florida, Illinois, New York, and Texas, have been considered hubs of Latino immigration for generations, and while the Latino population is increasing in those states, North Carolina was chosen specifically because of its fast-growing Latino population, which grew 1,300% from 1990 to 2020. Given the basic definition of wealth as the difference in what is owned versus what is owed, stark contrasts were highlighted in North Carolina, where the median wealth held by white households is $200,600, was more than 3.5 times greater than that of Latino households, $55,800. There was also considerable disparity in the value of assets held in financial institutions by white households, which had a median value of $14,000, versus Latino households with $3,000 in assets. Similarly, the median value of retirement accounts held by white households, $120,000, was profoundly greater than the $7,000 median retirement of Latino accounts. Eleazar Posada, who was elected to a second term on the Carrboro City Council earlier this month, has worked on behalf of the Latino community since graduating from Campbell University in 2015, including almost 6 years at El Centro Hispano. He is intimately aware of the challenges of building Latino wealth, both as the son of working-class immigrants and as a young professional. Posada works full-time as the Organizing Director for Equality North Carolina, an organization dedicated to advancing LGBTQ rights and equality, as well as part-time in his eponymous consulting business. We work with entrepreneurs wanting to start their own business, but the startup costs, even for a small company, can be pretty big. There aren't many organizations that will lend to folks if they don't have collateral or extensive credit history, so that's a huge barrier, says Posada, who self-funded his consulting business. I've seen folks spend the majority of their life savings to start a business and not get to start it until they're close to retirement age. From his vantage point as an elected official and strategic advisor, helping Latinos navigate the wealth gap becomes both a collaborative and pragmatic exercise. For instance, he recounts how El Centro Hispano and the town of Carrboro partnered to create a tool bank in an effort to support Hispanics seeking to start landscaping businesses. The town funds the tool bank, and El Centro buys landscaping equipment and rents it to new business owners for next to nothing, basically, what it will cost to maintain the equipment. And that helps immigrant business owners get started, he says. An inability to understand how the financial systems work and a lack of education are the biggest barriers Posada sees to personal advancement. Many folks don't have the benefit of a four-year degree, and that education gap translates starkly to who becomes the business owners and who are the ones getting the promotions in companies. Even though a lot of our community members may have the learned skills, they aren't up for promotions and higher wages, he says. From the time when the state emerged as a new destination for Latino immigration in the early 1990s, low wages were the standard for foreign-born Hispanics. Nathan Dollar, director of Carolina Demography, notes that most Latino immigrants in North Carolina during the 90s and early 2000s were recruited to work in agricultural crop production and meat and poultry processing plants, low-paying jobs on the bottom end of the labor market. Building wealth or starting a business was never a realistic option as long as the cost of living outpaced their minuscule earnings, a fact that remains true even today. In community conversations held from April through August of this year, members of the Latino community in North Carolina, California, Florida, and Illinois told the Brookings researchers that paying for daily living expenses was their top priority, and before they could think about economic mobility, they had to achieve economic stability in their households. How racial wealth inequity often persists is that the previous generations did not have wealth passed down, and even though access to education has increased, they don't have that cushion of wealth to rely on, and they end up supporting their parents and grandparents, which decreases their ability to generate wealth for themselves, Dollar says. In its 2019 survey of consumer finances, the Federal Reserve Board found that only 4% of Latino families expect to receive an inheritance, compared with 17% of white families. A critical point to consider is that the period of time when the Latino population of North Carolina started booming coincides with broader economic shifts. North Carolina's foreign-born population was 1.8% in 1980, and now it's 8.6%, and that's a period of time that historians, economists, and social scientists refer to as the era of neoliberal globalization, the period when wealth inequality in general started becoming more disparate between those that have wealth and those that don't. This is the precise period when Latino immigration started moving to North Carolina, so there are broader structural factors that affect this population's ability to create and accumulate wealth, Dollar says. Although the Brookings report does a good job of highlighting disparities in assets and debt, Dollar notes that there's a limitation in the 2021 Survey of Income and Program Participation, SIPP data, that the Brookings report relied on for its assessment. To be included in the sample where median household asset value was calculated, you had to have a household asset wealth above zero. So automatically it excludes people who don't have any household asset wealth, he says. All that to say, measuring Latino wealth in North Carolina is really challenging. The consensus is that building intergenerational wealth starts with increased home ownership. One of the areas Posada hopes to address as a council member is revisiting the land use ordinances in Carrboro to incentivize building affordable workforce housing. Moving from renting to owning a home is harder now, but we have to help folks achieve that, Posada says. Again, the pragmatic strategist comes out. It's a mixture of continuing to push Latino students to go to school, but also to go to a school that's going to get them into a career that will give them satisfaction personally and financially. He's thinking specifically of education to prepare for a profession in the trades, where half of the workforce in traditional plumbing, electrical, and HVAC careers are over the age of 50, and the physical demands of these jobs lead many to retire in their 50s or soon after, according to Explore the Trades, an organization founded in 2005 to develop and encourage a skilled workforce. How do you translate a four-year degree in philosophy or political science into making money? Posada says. We need folks to focus on areas where we don't have that many graduates coming out, where there's an aging workforce and the jobs are lucrative for young people. The executive voice section is about David Mars. It's an interview with Laura Brummett. Leading the Umstead Hotel and Spa is no small task. The hotel is the most upscale property in the Triangle and has a history of being the nicest hotel in the state. David Mars, the hotel's newly appointed general manager, is up for the challenge. Mars joined the Umstead in September following the retirement of Jim Bailey, the general manager of the hotel for nearly 15 years. Mars brings a long history in the hospitality industry to the Cary property. After graduating from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, with a degree in hotel administration, Mars helped open the Four Seasons Aviara property in Carlsbad, California. He later served in management positions at the MGM Grand Properties in Las Vegas, as well as resorts in Park City, Utah, and Big Sky, Montana. Mars most recently served as general manager for Salamander Hotels at their Destin, Florida, and Middleburg, Virginia locations. What got you into the hospitality business? I was about 12 years old when my parents booked a trip to Orlando, Florida. I was born and raised in Colorado. They took my sister and I to Orlando to the Hyatt Regency Grand Cypress. When I walked into that hotel and experienced the soaring glass elevators that went to this amazing atrium and the grand staircase that went down to this incredible restaurant with floor-to-ceiling windows that looked over the waterfalls and water slides, I knew at that very moment that I had to be part of making people feel the way I just felt. You were the general manager of the Henderson Beach Resort at the start of the pandemic. What was that like? It was hard. I think I share that sentiment with most, but Destin, Florida provided a unique atmosphere because we opened when we were still right in the crux of it. I would say we were one of the first hotels in the country, if not the world, to reopen after that initial shutdown in March 2020. We reopened Memorial Day weekend to 80% occupancy. From a leadership perspective, the obligation that I had was to make certain that not only were my employees kept safe, but that my guests were kept safe. We were relentless about making sure that we were successful from a business perspective, but also more than anything, making sure that our guests felt comfortable and safe and that our employees felt comfortable and safe. How did you land at the Umstead? I found that the best opportunities come when you least expect them. I had a great role with Salamander, and there was no intention for me to leave, but there was a gentleman that I previously worked with who called me and said, "I've got a really great opportunity for you." I said, "I'm not interested," but he said, "I don't think you understand. This is the opportunity of a lifetime." He told me it was the Umstead. The Umstead is synonymous for luxury and has always been nationally and internationally known. For me, it's the reputation the Umstead has in the community of Cary and the region, and equally so the reputation Jim Goodnight has as a leader from a culture perspective. My passion really lies in taking great care of your employees and seeing them thrive and grow. The only way you can do that is if you create a really great work environment. After doing my research that lined up with Goodnight and his role in the evolution of SAS, after meeting with the owners and the leadership team of the hotel, I felt like I could see myself staying here for a long time. So far, it has been such a great decision. My family is so happy to be here. What do you want to accomplish here? It's absolutely about building upon the successes that my predecessor and the team have built over the last 14 years. The majority of the leadership team here has been here since the opening of this hotel, and they've done a tremendous job putting this hotel on the map from a luxury perspective and in the community. Coming into this thing, I knew right away that there's nothing that needs to change, but you can always build and you can always get better. How's the business doing? Business levels are arguably back, and then up some from pre-pandemic levels. I was very pleasantly surprised to see that the growth in the business is still very strong. What we've seen this year at other hotels around the country is this kind of softening of business, softening of rates, softening of occupancy, and that things are just flattening out. Here at the Umstead, we've seen great growth in both rates and occupancy over last year. We're forecasting in our budget to continue to see that drive higher for 2024, so I'm very optimistic about the business levels that the hotel is seeing and the opportunity we have to achieve moving forward. What's your favorite hotel property to stay? I've had the good fortune in my career to travel all over the world and stay in some of the finest hotels, and I think my favorite part about travel is experiencing cultures that are completely different than my own. An area that I've been very fortunate to travel to numerous times for my career is Eastern Europe. I love Eastern Europe. I love the culture. I love the history. And Mr. Mars is 48 years old. The big numbers this week, 1.4 million. That's the number of travelers at Raleigh-Durham International Airport in October, a 19.5% increase over the last year, and a 7.1% increase over 2019 pre-pandemic. 27.5 million. That's how much funding Basking Biosciences has secured in a recent fundraising round. The company, which is developing a drug to treat strokes, aims to raise up to $55 million, according to a recent securities filing. $14.5 million. That's how much Pulte Group of Atlanta paid for 119 acres along Highway 401 in Garner in Fayetteville Road in early November, according to Wake County deed records. The acreage will be added to its community called Exchange at